You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for What's Up with Prime Minister Chris Hipkins.
Morena, Prime Minister. How are you this morning? How's the COVID?
I think I'm on the mend, thanks very much. Looking forward to getting back onto the campaign trail on Friday.
That is good to hear. I'm sorry that you've been struck by it. I'm sure nobody would be wanting to be catching COVID at any time, let alone in campaign mode. So hope you're feeling better soon. But let's talk about the campaign. Particularly broadly speaking, it's been quite, I think we can all agree, it's been quite an ugly election season in a lot of ways. It's been a lot of quite heated rhetoric that's going around. And we've also seen, I think, a marked increase in perhaps aggression towards political candidates and people on the campaign trail. Of course, Hana Rawhiti Maipi Clark from Te Pāti Māori had a very scary incident last week happen to her house. We've also seen the National Party has said that there's parts of Auckland that they're not campaigning in at the moment because of abuse their volunteers have been facing. And also Angela Roberts from the Labour Party had a horrible incident where she was slapped after a debate. So this is a pretty intense boiling situation that we've got going on here. From your perspective, what's changed this election campaign and why are we seeing this?
I think in the post-COVID environment, we have seen a sort of an importation of some of the divisiveness that we've seen in the polarisation that we've seen in other countries, particularly from the United States, that we haven't seen in New Zealand in the past. So this is small kind of fringe elements really adopting some quite underhand and manipulative approaches to misinformation and disinformation in order to get people expressing views that are certainly more radical than they might have previously held and do things that they would never have previously imagined doing. And I think that that's really unfortunate. I think, you know, my message to Kiwis is two things, really. One is continue to engage in the election campaign with respect and by all means be passionate. I think, you know, politics should be a passionate business. People should be passionate about their views. But the second is, and I think this is really, really important, continue to make sure you've got people in your life who you disagree with, because actually people become sort of more radical in their thinking when they become very insular, when they stop associating with people who challenge their way of thinking. And they start to think, oh, well, everybody thinks the same way that I do, when in fact they don't. And so I think it's really important for democracy that we continue to promote an open and liberal democracy where people are able to disagree with one another and that we can do that without falling out with people.
Do you think that the general rhetoric, there's been a lot of very sort of, I guess, close to the quick type of conversations happening this election campaign? Do you think that the rhetoric from the political parties has perhaps not helped this situation? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I certainly think some of the divisiveness around race has been really unwelcome. It's unfortunately for a small segment of New Zealand society, it's scratched an underbelly that's always been there. And I think it's pretty low politics when politicians set out deliberately to do that, which some do seem to have been doing.
Let's talk a wee bit about Labour's full policy plan now, because this is a big document. It's your manifesto. It shows us exactly what Labour would like to do in the first 100 days of the next season if you do get re-elected. There's a big focus on education and training for young people here. Why is this specifically something Labour is interested in supporting at the moment?
Well, this is why I've got into politics. I mean, I think if you want to provide young New Zealanders with a better future, making sure that they've got access to world-class education and training is the way that you can do that. So it starts with early childhood education, right the way through schooling and into tertiary education, making sure that we're doing more in the apprenticeship space, making sure that we're doing more on-the-job training, because those are, you know, many of those are going to be the areas where we've got the greatest skill shortages and the greatest opportunity to get people into the workforce quickly so that they can earn and learn at the same time.
We have seen a lot of conversation, and I see this document also focuses a lot on the trade sector in that tertiary space, which is really important. But where does the academic sector come into this? We know universities have had a really hard time over the last 10 years, really, but it's come to a head in the last couple of years since COVID. Where do they sit into the conversation from Labour's perspective?
What the policy commits us to is that is completing that funding review that we've started of the way universities are funding. We recently did a funding review in vocational education, and we're really starting to see the benefits that flow from that. We've got one underway for universities now, for degree-level study now. We've got to see that one through. We've given them an interim funding boost in the meantime. We did that a couple of months ago. And so that, I think, is, you know, helping to tide them over while this bigger question of, you know, what's the best funding model for universities is addressed.
There's also in this document a nod to exploring an Aotearoa arts strategy. Now, this is really interesting for our listenership, Chris, because arts has been pretty shortchanged in the budget. And since basically since the COVID funding dried up, people were seeing it in their lived experience. It's a pretty hard time out there for people working in the creative sector. What does an Aotearoa arts strategy look like from a Labor perspective?
We've got to recognise that we're an incredibly creative country, and actually arts contributed an enormous amount to us as a society and to our economy. As a, you know, country that relies a lot on tourism, for example, arts is a really important part of, you know, attracting people to come and visit New Zealand, but it also just enriches all of our lives. And, you know, I think when we're talking about the arts, we're talking about a very broad spectrum of activity here, where, you know, everything from going out for a night at the theatre through to musical performances, through to physical arts that gets, you know, that you might be buying to hang in your home or in your workplace. There's a whole spectrum of activity covered under arts. And I think during the COVID period, we did support our artistic community through an incredibly challenging time. We can't sustain that forever. But now I think what we've got to look at is how can we continue to grow and foster the arts in New Zealand in a way that is, you know, stable, predictable, rather than a sort of a boom and bust cycle, which we found the arts community have often been subjected to in the past.
One thing that the arts community, I guess, have also seen as a pattern is that when things get sticky, when we see something like a cost of living crisis, things, well-intentioned programs to support the arts get shunted down the pipeline. Is Labor committing to supporting the arts as a priority in this next election, in this next government season, if you are in that place?
Well, I think our track record speaks to the fact that we do support the artistic community. When times got really tough during COVID-19, you saw a lot of support going into the artistic community.
This is true, Chris, but the budget was not fantastic. I mean, we saw some specific targeted funding to some great organisations like Te Mata Tini. That's awesome. But broadly speaking, it was pretty crumbs out there.
Yeah, and so I think in the next term we'll certainly be looking to make sure that we're supporting the artistic community to rebuild after the, you know, off the back of COVID and off the back of some pretty challenging times.
Well, let's talk about the press leaders debate. This has been a debate in and of itself. Obviously, you've been out with COVID, and there's been a back and forth between Labor and National about whether your deputies should stand in, whether somebody should stand in for you, or whether you should reschedule it. We are now seeing that the press leaders debate is going to go ahead next Tuesday. It's going to feature leaders from the significant minor parties, but no Labor, no National. What's going on here?
Look, I've said that as soon as I'm out of isolation, I'm happy to debate Christopher Luxon pretty much anywhere, anytime. Unfortunately, he's indicated that his schedule is too busy. So I think he's prioritising sitting at home eating KFC by the looks of it. Fair enough. But that means that there'll be one remaining leaders' debate between the two major party leaders, and that will be on next Thursday.
Do you feel like the South Island has been perhaps a bit neglected on the campaign trail this season by the major parties? We haven't really seen a lot down in that space.
I spent the entire first week of the campaign in the South Island, so touched as many bases as possible, several days in Christchurch, Dunedin, over on the West Coast, in Nelson. So, I've certainly spent time down there. I was due to be down there again this week. Unfortunately, COVID-19's put an end to that.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Prime Minister. We really appreciate it and hope you're feeling back to 100% soon and able to do what you need to do in the next couple of weeks. We really appreciate your time on the show, so take care.
Many thanks.
Kia ora.
That was What's Up with Prime Minister Chris Hipkins.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.